Have you ever heard of Bunny Chow or Cook Sisters? Babuiti, Chicken Tikka, these are all dishes that shaped my world as a child just because of migration. Come with me, Erica von Kaschke, as we pass the cinnamon stick to people who have come to Australia. Listen to their migration stories, to what they bring to the land down under and what they get from it. Welcome to the Cinnamon Stick. My name is Erica von Kaschke, and it's my great pleasure to interview John Cope, facilitator of the World Music Cafe. John, you're probably one of the Australians that I know that are the most adept at working with people from a migrant or refugee background. I've always wondered, did you grow up in Australia or did your parents migrate here?
No, we migrated here when I was young. I was born in New Zealand, but I lived in Africa, in Nigeria, for a period of time when I was small, toddler. And we also lived in England. My father was English and he was a geologist, so he travelled the world all over the place. And then we settled in Australia.
It must have been amazing growing up in a family that have lived in so many places. Did your parents kind of have words of wisdom for you and your brothers, how to live elsewhere and be with other cultures?
I don't remember that so much, but it was more that it was perfectly normal for families to move around the world. I just anticipated that that's what everybody did and that's what I would be doing later on.
So how has the fact that your family has lived in so many different parts of the world influenced your life?
I think it's not so much when I was a child, but when I grew up, I was able to go travelling myself. And when I left Australia, I went for a few years and travelled around the world as a musician, trying to be a musician in all sorts of places, and had a great time. And yeah, it was a lot of fun meeting lots of new people and travelling to many countries where English isn't the first language. So I was exposed to all sorts of different cultures.
So is that which inspired you to start working in the arts and culture sphere, or how did you end up in this line of work?
Well, as a musician, I was always fascinated about music and musicians, and I find that music is in every culture, of course. So even if you can't speak English language together, you can speak the language of music together. And that happened on many occasions around the world. So I found that was fascinating. And as a musician, I started organising my own shows, organising my own bands. And I was just organising things all the time. And maybe it was that I liked to do it my way. But that's what sort of attracted me to arts management. And being a musician and managing things and organising things and led me to work in the arts.
Obviously, it sounds like your travels have been amazing and you've been exposed to many great things there. But what has been the two highlights of your career prior to starting work at Multicultural Futures?
Well, I think being in some moderately successful bands and touring all around Australia and touring all around Asia and all around Europe was fantastic, with a band that was a working partnership. So it was all those things like teamwork, and it was exciting. But there's a window for that sort of activity. Unless you're incredibly successful, that window slowly closes as you get a bit older and other things in your life become more important. But that being a traveling musician was a great experience, and just being exposed to working in the arts in different countries as an artist, as a musician. And then when I came back, I got involved in arts management. I studied that, and then I worked for a number of arts organisations in Fremantle over about 15 years, ending up as the CEO of Culture and Multicultural Arts. And that was an incredible experience, with meeting so many musicians and just realising how important culture is to so many people, and people want to share their culture. So that had a big influence on me, and which is why I work in the field I work in now.
And then you had great success as well at the City of Armidale. Tell us a little bit about what you did there.
I was the Community Arts Cultural Development Officer. I was the first one in the City of Armidale. And I firmly believed that working in the Community Development Department, that what we needed to do was draw the culture out from the community, facilitate the people in that community of Armidale to define their own culture. So I was connecting people and meeting lots of people, listening to what they wanted to achieve, connecting them to other people that had similar ideas. It's incredibly how isolated people become in cities, and you know, they don't find the mechanism to share their common passions. So once you start connecting people, there's this huge energy that starts to generate, and the synergy. Once you start guiding that towards constructive projects that align with the city's objectives and the community's objectives, once you get that lined up, it can be very successful and very rewarding for the community participants, who feel like they're being listened to and empowering. And then it leads to all sorts of community benefits through that social connection, the health benefits, you know, the sense of place, mental health benefits. It's a very positive experience, and culture is such a undervalued mechanism to bring people together.
I so agree with you, because it's almost like the fabric that makes up why we enjoy life. People don't seem to value that always, but if it's taken away, then it's almost like the freedoms that people feel that have been removed through COVID has a lot to do with that interaction that we have with other human beings.
Mm. One of the arts is one of the biggest industries in the country, but if you compare it to something like sport, you have professional sport, which is, you know, huge multi-million dollar budgets and, you know, huge organizations involved, but you also have grassroots sports, and governments don't bat an eyelid about, you know, it's $4 million to build an oval with some facilities around it. But that sort of investment in sport is always seen as, well, we're going to do this, you know, we'll find the money and we'll do it. Whereas, you know, you've got major arts organizations, but you've also got grassroots arts organizations, and that sort of investment isn't put into the grassroots arts and cultural sector.
What makes World Music Cafe so different and special? And what attracted you to this job?
The social enterprise aspect of it is very important. Having worked as an independent musician, it's a tough gig making money. When you work in arts organisations, you're often supported through government subsidies, and that's a very competitive dog-eat-dog world of trying to secure funding, get long-term funding. It's never enough. Your expectations are higher than what resources you have. To do it as a social enterprise, I think, is a really interesting third way of doing things, where you're actually engaging with grassroots people, you are teaching them skills to build a business, they're getting a lot of interesting benefits out of it, such as skills training, work experience in a local environment, which is very important for them, because when they do go for jobs, they say, what's your local experience? And they've genuinely got work, local experience. But also the social connection, the camaraderie and belonging to something is very important for a lot of the new migrants involved. So it's that combination of sharing food and music, which is common in every culture, packaging it up as the World Music Cafe events, which becomes the vehicle for people to experience those benefits.
You had 3 live shows last year. What was some of the feedback you got from the audience and then also from your participants?
The 3 live shows went very well. The first one was a complete surprise. It went much better than we expected. It was great. After 7 weeks of being together with these new participants, we put on our first show. Everybody stepped up, and there were moments where it didn't go perfectly according to the plan, but it was a much better event than I think any of us anticipated. And there was just this excitement and energy in the room, which fortunately was captured in film. And then we went on to do 2 more events in Southern River in a community centre, which were also terrific, with a variety of professional artists and also community artists. Through those, team really bonded through those 3 events, you know, the kitchen team, the production team and the marketing team and the customer service team. It felt like we were doing something real, which was the whole purpose of this model.
So, and then, like everybody knows, COVID-19 hit the world. How did that affect World Music Cafe?
So coming into this year, we had big plans about what we were going to do. From about April to June this year, we had a whole lot of shows lined up. Some really interesting opportunities had come up because World Music Cafe was starting to attract all sorts of people to the team. Unfortunately, COVID hit, so like everyone else, we stopped the face-to-face contact and went on to Zoom, which was interesting. And to their credit, all the participants managed that very well, all the digital technology. But we did start making a World Music Cafe show, like a TV show, and we're just bringing that together now. And it will go on YouTube, on our World Music Cafe YouTube channel, as you know. And it's a really interesting mix of live event footage with music, behind the scenes interviews with musicians, cooking segments with Hoda and Rivka, who are our key kitchen team members, and also testimonials from various participants.
So when you look at musicians and artists that you would like to perform at the World Music Cafe, how do you select them?
Having worked at Culture Multicultural Arts and been involved with Multicultural Arts for over 10 years, I have a really good knowledge of who's around, and I talk to a lot of multicultural artists. We've got some fantastic talent based here in Perth. But what we don't know is all the new talent that's coming in and a lot of the community musicians. So that's been fascinating to try and find those people, like Asad Alizada, who's a Dombora player from Afghanistan. We want to find more of these people because when people get a chance to perform, express their culture, they really come out and you see deep into what people's souls. So we want to share that. I think that for a lot of different groups, that ethnic groups that are coming into Perth, sharing their culture is a great way to embrace other people and for other people to embrace them.
So what has been some of the unexpected highlights for you so far?
Well, I just mentioned Asad Alizada, and seeing him perform in that first show was incredible. I mean, it was just a magical moment where the audience was absolutely spellbound by this Afghan musician who looked quite different, and of course he was blind, as we discovered, from being injured in the war in Afghanistan. But the joy on his face and the emotion in his singing and his playing was just incredible, and it's not something you see every day. I think for Asad it was probably the best performance he'd had since arriving in Australia 5 years earlier, and what a gift that is for both sides.
Yeah, that's amazing. And I've seen when you filmed, there were even artists from the same country that had met before and met in Perth and now are collaborating.
That's one of the things about music, is that it is an easy art form to collaborate on, with a bit of, you know, getting together and rehearsing and practicing and just getting to know each other. And so that's a great thing about the World Music Cafe. And we have this phrase that it's connection, it's collaboration, and it's celebration.
And then I've heard there were some unexpected friendships that were formed in the team as well.
In the kitchen team, we had Hoda Kabara, who's from Lebanon, and she's very capable in the kitchen and a great cook, and specializes in her Middle Eastern cuisine. But we brought in an experienced restaurateur in Rivka Cohen, who's from Israel, who had come to Australia about 20 years earlier and started her own restaurant as a way of integrating with the community. And she was very successful, and she was very innovative in creating a fusion of vegan food, ahead of her time, really. And, she'd recently retired, so Rivka joined the kitchen team as a mentor, and Hoda and Rivka have just become firm friends. As they mentioned in the recent film that we've just made, they talk about previously they would have watched each other through the fence between Lebanon and Israel, but now they were free to be together.
So what's next for the World Music Cafe?
So we're hoping that the COVID restrictions continue to be lifted, and we're planning a series of events in September in the south of Perth, possibly in the Raleigh Stone area and also in the Fremantle area. We start the new training on the 3rd of August, and we're looking for new people to join that want to get involved in a social enterprise such as the World Music Cafe, where they'll learn employability skills, get the work experience and social connection. So if there's anybody out there with an interest in cultural events, whatever your talents are, we're very interested in talking to you.
Sounds amazing. So how can people contact you if they would like to join the World Music Cafe or perform at one of the live performances?
I think the easiest thing would be to go to our website, worldmusiccafe.com.au. So that's worldmusiccafe.com.au. There will be the contact details there to send us an email or give us a call. And we are definitely looking for musicians and dancers and performers but we're also looking for new team members that want to help put on these events. Whether you want to do customer service, work in the kitchen, help with the production, help book the artists, or marketing, there's so many different roles to be done, and we're really looking for some good people that want to commit to it.
So that's just go to worldmusiccafe.com.au. So John, I normally end the podcast with the same two questions. I've reshaped it a little bit for you. Which phrase or word from another culture has most inspired you?
There's a few. I guess a lot of my previous travels involved going around playing music, and I can probably say cheers in a number of different languages. So whether it's kippis from Finland or slante from Ireland, the crack and the good times that I had, and just the joy of being alive and singing and playing music and celebrating life together, that was quite special.
Yeah, like music always brings joy, I think, you know, not even if it's a melancholic song, it just makes you feel alive if you listen to music. Which Australian word or phrase do you most relate to?
What I do like about Australia is that sense of a fair go, that, you know, everybody can come here and give it a go. And if you put in and you contribute, then, you know, you will be rewarded. But Australia, the Australia that I know and that I remember growing up in was about that we weren't so divided. It was that we were in a egalitarian society and that everybody was equal. And I like that about Australia. I know it's not necessarily true. I know there's privileges for different people and different groups, but I think the core of Australia is that we are striving to be in this together.
From a migrant's point of view, I can definitely tell you there's a lot more grace and compassion for people in Australia than I think in many countries. And you do feel like there is hope, there's a good future for you and your children if you put the work in. And it's amazing to hear how many people say that is the phrase that they either have adopted about Australia or that they made their own, is a fair go. So I think that's great. It covers everybody's sense of justice.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for being on the show, and all the best with the World Music Cafe. And so just again, if you want to get in touch with John, just go to the website worldmusiccafe.com.au.